Welcome to Post Carbon Radio. Our program today is we're going to be talking about a ban on fracking in California, and in the second half hour, on shutting down Diablo Canyon so we can have a nuke-free California. So, and my co-host, Karen Nijholz, will read our mission statement.
All right. Welcome to Post Carbon Radio, where we examine converging systemic failures in economy, ecology, and human coexistence on Earth. Rather than despair of these crises, we see them as related symptoms of a larger system that doesn't work, and which we can choose to replace. In that spirit, we search for concrete solutions, transformative visions, and ways to get there together. We look at hard realities with you on this show, remembering that big crises are also big opportunities we can act on together, building community resilience as we go. We believe that facing the facts and our deepest fears can paradoxically unearth our fondest wishes and best collaborative creative nature. Won't you become a paradigm warrior? Join us in envisioning and building a radically better future on today's edition of Post Carbon Radio.
And our guests today in the studio are Main Street Moms, Chris Brown and Kathy Colloway. And welcome to Post Carbon Radio.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bane.
Yeah. Before we start, why don't we give, for listeners that don't know about Main Street Moms, tell us a little bit about your background and what you guys do.
Okay. Well, Main Street Moms is a nonprofit citizen action group, and we started 10 years ago. Really on election integrity and getting out the vote. And over the years, we've continued that, most recently in the last election, sending out 25,000 letters from the West Marin area to encourage women to vote in a couple of states. And in the last maybe over 5 years, we've included a focus on clean energy, and that's why stopping fracking comes in. And also, we were very involved in helping Marin Clean Energy get off the ground. So we'll be talking about more.
And you guys meet every Monday at the firehouse, and
from 3 to 5 most Mondays, except for holidays, and.
Yes. And summer break.
Yeah, and people are welcome to join us.
Even gentlemen?
Yes. Okay. And Bing, you are one of our most honorary Main Street Moms.
Thank you. It's an honor. And I have to mention that we were in New York City for the People's Climate March in September with about 5-6 Main Street Moms.
Yes, yeah. We had a great crowd.
Yeah. Yeah, so wonderful. So why don't we start off with there's going to be a huge action coming up on February 7th. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Last March, there was a rally in Sacramento, an anti-fracking rally. And we feel it's time. It's several groups that are working, 350.org, Californians Against Fracking, Center for Biological Diversity, Food and Water Watch. That's among the top groups that are kind of putting this on. And they felt that it needed to have a bigger push on Governor Brown's doorstep, basically, in Oakland. So on Saturday, February 7th, there is a march that there's been a lead up of a tour kind of going through various cities from Southern California on up, talking to people in different locales about anti-fracking and getting them kind of geared up for this march. There will be buses coming from all over the state, and particularly from the areas that are impacted by fracking, more in the Central Valley area. And so we're trying to get as many people as possible. And for people living in Marin, you can get – there's a bus going from the Green Bay Park and Ride, which you need to be there by 10:15 on that Saturday, February 7th. And then it'll take you right there, drop you off. The march starts at noon from Frank Agawa Oscar Grant Plaza at 14th and Broadway in Oakland, goes to Lake Merritt. And it's not, it's only about, it's from like noon to 2:30 is the march. It's not that far. And then after, well, then the bus will pick you up there and when it's over and take you back. And you should be back by, they say, 4 p.m. And it's $18, but they are offering some scholarships if people can't afford that. And that includes, the $18 includes a tip for the driver. And people are asked to wear blue. It's the color theme of the day.
Clean air color.
Yeah, clean air, clean water. So if you have blue items, wear them. And if you have any, if you want to sign up for the bus, you go to 350marin.org. To sign up for the bus. And if you want any information about the march itself, you can go to marchforclimateleadership.org.
Do we bring homemade signs? Or
you? Oh, that's always encouraged. Homemade signs are always encouraged. And bring your own, you know, like water and snack or something like that, because it'll be right in the middle of the day.
And how about folks from other areas? You said there are buses coming up through the valley. If people come down from Sonoma, is anything being arranged for that?
Oh, yeah, the buses from all over. So what you would do is go to marchforclimateleadership.org.
Great.
And then there's a place you can click on to find a bus coming from your area.
Okay. And what's the main demand?
Well, it's mainly trying to draw attention to the reason they're doing it in Oakland and kind of focusing on Governor Brown is that they want him to really be a climate leader. And they feel, the groups feel, that as long as he is allowing the fossil fuel industry to completely, you know, continue to ravage the state, he is not being a climate leader. And particularly in this time of a severe drought, they just feel this is a really bad situation. But more, also in conjunction with the march, they're getting all these climate leaders, people, local activists from around the state, to have this, what they're calling a convergence. And there's a meeting after the rally for people that are going to be breakout groups for areas, different areas of the state, to try to work together and network. And then on Sunday, they're having even a like kind of a more honed-in group of people. And it's really about networking and trying to figure out how are we approaching these issues. And, I mean, one issue, too, is the really dirty oil coming from the Bakken crude and Canada, I think, still, coming to the Bay Area. And they're increasing areas in our Bay Area for refineries and for shipping. And very dangerous situation. So that's going to be a topic as well.
So is that expanding beyond the Chevron refinery has had a struggle for a long time in Richmond over the heavy crude. Is this now being expanded to more refineries?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And down the coast, too. There are certain areas where they're really targeting and more of these crude by rail. And it's I mean, it's just rife with problems.
Yeah. If people want to participate in these geographic breakouts and they're taking the bus, does that work out? Is that convergence time included in the bus schedule?
No.
Okay.
No, because that is more people who have signed up. There's a limited number of people. So if you are involved in one of those organizations already, you may already have gotten the information about this and you may already be signed up for that and have carpooling or different ways of getting there. But just the bodies on the ground for the march itself is what most of the buses are, at least for Marin. That's what they're doing.
And that same website would give you further information.
And let's say it again, just in case people are just tuning in.
marchforclimateleadership.org.
Right, and part of the reason Kathy and I are going is to get up to speed because, you know, here in the Bay Area, you know, Inverness Public Utilities District declared a ban on fracking, but there's not a danger of fracking here, but it was a statement about clean water and very important statements throughout, but throughout the state, even where there isn't fracking. But so this February 7th event is not only crucial for the people who are affected now, and that's why there's lots of buses coming up from the Central Valley, but it's also important for us who live in non-fracking areas to look at issues that are deeply connected to it. And
you know, we're assuming that our listeners, they know about fracking. Just briefly give us an overview of the impacts of fracking.
Well, we're basically talking about hydraulic fracturing, and it's actually a very confusing topic nationally because people often think it has to do with natural gas, which is certainly what is going on in particularly the eastern half of the country. But in California, it is oil. And we have a very odd, as you can imagine, geologic structure here because of the faults and overlapping of our strata. And it's a very difficult and costly process to extract oil. So they do it in ways that are, they're injecting chemicals, and they're also, once the produced water comes out, they have to re-inject that. They don't have to. They choose to re-inject this really toxic brew into injection wells, which are actually the source of earthquakes. But it's really, it's an expensive and technical way of squeezing oil out of our areas that really are so different than, like, Texas, you know, the flatlands where you just dig a well. So
it's no longer the straw in the pond of oil, right? It's now getting stuff out of little fractures and cracks in between bits of other sediment, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And then there's a problem with the wastewater itself, and that, you know, so there are many issues about pollution and degrading the land,
and not focusing on what at least many of us feel is trying to encourage renewable sources of energy instead of continually going for the fossil fuel solution.
Well, I just heard, of course, we know that New York just passed that ban, which is encouraging, and hopefully we'll follow their lead.
Right. Well, that's where it gets complex because, yeah. I mean, in California, because Governor Brown seems to have made it clear he's not going to declare a ban. And so can we pressure him to change his mind? That's a question. And barring that, what are the other strategies that groups and individual citizens can be part of, whether it would be an initiative process on the ballot, whether it's more local bans? San Benito is an area that had success passing a local ban. Then there are legal issues. It gets very complicated, but it also is, like your mission statement said, an opportunity for people to come together and move us closer to renewable energy, clean energy, and away from profit-driven methods.
So are those strategic questions the sort, is that going to be the focus of this convergence after the march is figuring out what next, what to
yes.
demand next?
Yes, and basically networking with the different groups so they can support each other, but also to try to come towards some consensus, which could be a little difficult because I think there are really the two camps. I think that the larger camp, at least from what I've read, does not feel an initiative is a good idea because it would require so much money. And you cannot very easily fight the big money. And it would be a real disaster if it failed. So it would be saying California does want fracking. So there is a group who really thinks that that's a way to do it. So I think, you know, that's what they're trying to do is come together.
There was a bill, SB 1132, last year, but because, like you said, the big money was able to fight it, and it narrowly—did it pass the Senate? I can't remember, but I know it failed. It didn't get to the Assembly.
Right.
And big fossil fuel money, $15 million, I think, to buy our legislators.
Exactly.
Yeah. You said you also wanted to talk about clean energy.
Right. It's important to be against something like fracking, but we also like to be for something. So clean energy has been a focus also of ours at Main Street Moms.
And explain a little bit, clean energy, what are we talking about?
Well, what I wanted to talk about, well, first of all, clean energy is a broad category which reduces our dependence on fossil fuels, keeps the fossil fuels in the ground.
We're talking about the Marin.
Okay, so then, so I was just referring to the broad topic. In Marin County, most people know that we have an alternative to PG&E for the source of our electricity, and that is Marin Clean Energy. And so 80% of the people in Marin County are now Marin Clean Energy customers. They still get their bills from PG&E, and PG&E still does the repairs. But Marin Clean Energy buys the electricity sources from cleaner providers. And what we're interested in doing now is at Main Street Moms is reminding people about Marin Clean Energy and that there is Marin Clean Energy is already 50% cleaner than PG&E, or twice as clean as PG&E. PG&E is only 25% renewable. The regular service for Marin Clean Energy is 50% renewable. What people don't know, we're finding out, is that there's an option to sign up for Deep Green, which is 100% renewable. It's supporting the purchase of wind power, 100% wind power, and it's supporting fees for startups for solar, local solar companies. So it's doing those two important things right here in Marin.
And how much extra do you know would you pay for a Deep Green option?
The typical household pays less than $5 a month more for the Deep Green option.
I want to remind our listeners, you're listening to Post Carbon Radio, and we're here in the studio with Main Street Moms, Chris Brown and Kathy Calloway.
Oh, Chris, can I just, I want to clarify when you said that it helps support, you know, startups of solar companies. These are not solar installers. They're supporting actual solar arrays and production.
Generators.
Generators of electricity.
Right. There's one in Novato already, and they're looking at other places to establish them.
Yeah, I think the more local, the better, as I understand it, so we don't have to transport all that electricity all over here.
And one of the reasons we decided to recharge up on this was when we went to the march in New York City, the rally, we talked to people, you know, among the 400,000 other people who were there. And one of the things that got people's attention is when we talked about Marin Clean Energy. And it was an eye-opener for, really? You have a not-for-profit power authority. Its mission is to address climate change. Yes. It is part of its mission is to support local energy and local jobs. And now that's still down the line. And that's exactly why we want to sort of re-up a campaign for Deep Green, because the more people who sign up for Deep Green, the more it can become 100% renewable for everybody. And, you know, we're not working for Marin Clean Energy. We can start to sound like marketers for Marin Clean Energy. But why we're so passionate about it is because it's something concrete we can do to make a difference right now. And in a world where something like climate change is such a huge, complicated, are we really going to be able to make a difference? It's good to buy the right light bulbs, but signing up for Deep Green really takes a lot of carbon out of the air. Sometimes they estimate, you know, how many cars it takes off the highway for each customer, and I can't give you those figures, but it's substantial.
And as you're saying, doing so also supports just building a new infrastructure, right? Just gradually starting to lay that in place so that when the next price shock comes in the traditional markets, right now we're in this oil glut that's kind of a, I don't know. What do you have to say about the oil glut? It seems to, do you think it's putting people in a daze on?
That's one of the things that will probably get addressed on February 7th. You wonder, are people buying the big cars again and spending, you know, getting more gas?
It has had an impact on what people are saying about the future of fracking in California, because the fracking in California is so much more expensive than in other areas that if the cost of oil goes down, it's really cost prohibitive to the oil companies.
And I've heard it slowed down the development of the Alberta tar sands, too. They're mm-hmm. laying off workers mm-hmm. because it's not a...
Right, and I just read mm-hmm. something about the oil companies making big decisions about not investing in their oil drilling. So it's a mixed bag, you know. Does that deflate the energy towards a movement like stopping fracking, or does it energize it? So, well.
Yeah, well, we've seen a huge amount of volatility in oil prices since the financial crisis, so I would guess we can expect more of that, right?
I think you're right about that. But I do really recognize that something like Deep Green with Marin Clean Energy increases the demand for renewable energy in that world of corporate production.
And, you know, you're not automatically signed up for it. You have to call or email Marin Clean Energy and ask to be signed up for Deep Green.
And do you want to give a website where people can do that, or a phone number?
Right. It's basically marincleanenergy.org for the website. And the phone number is toll-free, 888-632-3674. And someone, just say you're interested in Deep Green. Maybe you're not sure you're signed up for Deep Green. You have to kind of look at your bill carefully. But it might be easier to just make that call or email them through their website at marincleanenergy.org.
Again, I'd like to put in a plug for Main Street Moms. You meet every Monday. In fact, today you'll have a meeting at the firehouse.
3 o'clock, 3 to 5.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's welcome.
Great. Was there anything else you'd like to cover today? Tell us about the February 7th
yeah,
again.
Yeah, just mm-hmm. if you can, possibly. And, I mean, going on a bus makes it all real easy. No parking, driving hassles. And you meet fun people on the bus. So the bus leaving from Marin on the 7th of February leaves from Green Bay Park and Ride. But if you go to 350marin.org, you can sign up for the bus and pay for it and get your ticket online. And easy. Easy.
And again, what time do people have to be in that parking lot?
They have to be there by 10:15. And I just heard from one of the Marin organizers that they're already over half full. So if a lot of people sign up, they'll get another bus. But if you're interested at all, I would suggest doing it ASAP.
Okay. We'll see you at the march.
Okay, great.
Thank you, Chris Brown and Kathy Calloway, for coming in to Post Carbon Radio.
Thanks, Bing.
Thank you.
You're listening to KWMR, 90.5 FM Point Reyes, 92.3 FM San Geronimo Valley, and 89.9 FM in Bolinas. Streaming live at kwmr.org, community radio for West Marin.
Next half hour, we have a pre-recorded interview with Harvey Wasserman, a journalist, longtime anti-nuke activist, and advocate for renewable energy. And with Mary Beth Brangan and James Heddle of the Ecological Options Network of Bolinas. And they'll be discussing actions to close down Diablo Canyon. This was recorded a week ago, so some of the events that they're talking about have already happened, but There is a strategy session on shutting down Diablo Canyon on Tuesday, tomorrow, January 27th in San Francisco. And you'll hear more details on that. So here is our interview with Harvey Wasserman, Mary Beth Brandgen, and James Heddle.
This is Post Carbon Radio, and on the telephone in Cleveland, Ohio. Is that right, Harvey?
Columbus, but you're close enough.
Columbus. Okay, we have Harvey Wasserman, a journalist, a longtime anti-nuclear activist, and an advocate for new renewable energy. And on the phone in Bolinas, we have Mary Beth Brandgen and Jim Heddle of the Ecological Options Network in Bolinas. They're videographers, and they cover nuclear issues. And we're going to be talking today about shutting down Diablo Canyon to make California a nuke-free state. Can you let's begin by maybe, I know Mary Beth and James, you're planning to organize a conference down in San Luis Obispo.
Well, Mary Beth is on the organizing committee, and Harvey is an important part of it. Mary Beth, why don't you lay out the schedule for us?
Well, the evening of Friday, January 23rd, we're going to, Cynthia Papermaster and Harvey are going to be at a San Luis Obispo library.
I think the Grange.
Mm-hmm. It says so. No, Friday night. Library, and Sunday it's at the library, and Saturday it's at the Grange. And we're going, Harvey, you might want to talk about, we'll do this in chronological order. You want to talk about Friday night?
Friday night is going to be a get-together. We're going to have food and music and general discussions about shutting Diablo, the whole purpose of the weekend. And then of our, we are having a meeting, an organizing meeting in San Francisco at Unite Unit Local Number 2 in The Hague from 6 to 9. So we're devoting all our time in these 4 days to figuring out how to shut Diablo Canyon. We have a movement. We have issues. We know the plant is in trouble. We know PG&E is in trouble, and we want California to be nuclear free as soon as humanly possible. I was actually arrested at Diablo in 1984, 30 years ago, and we need to now have these reactors shut down, and we're going to figure out how to do it. So Friday night in San Luis Obispo at the Grange, and then is it Saturday at the library?
No, it's the other way around.
Friday night at the library, and then Saturday at the Grange, be a little grungy at the Grange, then Sunday back at the library. This is all in San Luis Obispo, and people can go to the website, and then Tuesday night from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Unite Local Number 2 in San Francisco. And this is all oriented towards a real hardcore strategy. We're not going to be real abstract here. This is the time. Reactors are shutting down all over the United States, in fact, all over the world. We just had a huge victory shutting down Vermont Yankee, which went down December 29th. We have succeeded in shutting down the two reactors at San Onofre, a giant victory for citizen activism. And also Rancho Seco, of course, has been shut since 1989. Bodega was stopped and Humboldt was shut. So also the projects for Bakersfield was shut. So California is on the brink of being nuclear free and becoming a huge mecca for solar energy, a solartopian pioneer. And so that's what this is all about.
It's interesting that you mentioned having been arrested there 30 years ago, because this is kind of coming full circle to this point in time. And it's a tribute to the success of the No Nukes movement over the years, because Nixon had plans for nukes all up and down the West Coast, and citizen action and revelations of problems basically stopped that whole idea. And now we're down to the last nuke standing, Diablo.
But there's still 100 nuclear plants operating in the U.S., And I understand China is planning to build 26 more nuclear plants, and the U.S. India has a deal with India to develop their nuclear energy.
That's right.
Well, that's all in the future. There actually are. I don't want to correct you on a mere detail, but there are actually now 99 right. in the U.S. since Vermont Yankee shut. There are two under construction in Georgia and two under construction in South Carolina, and we don't think those are ever going to be finished. All this talk about building new nukes is, I think, moot because renewables have come on and they're so cheap now. Photovoltaics and wind, geothermal, ocean thermal, with hemp becoming legal in many places, biofuels are becoming more viable. So there's actually an article in the New York Times today about an island off Denmark, Samsø Island, that has gone 100% renewable. And so the technology has so far outstripped nuclear power. I mean, there are corporations that are holding on because they're making money on the idea of new reactors, but I just don't think it's going to happen. And our focus now is to really shut the existing reactors, and many of them are no longer competitive. Even older reactors like Diablo, which have been fully amortized, they don't even have mortgages to pay off, still can't compete with renewable energy. And you know, especially now in Ohio, Illinois, and New York State, there are reactors that are going into and asking for subsidies to keep operating. And this will happen in California. So we want these reactors down. This is our time finally to convert to Solartopia.
Yeah, the nuclear industry is really a dependent case here. It couldn't survive without the many tax breaks and subsidies and indemnifications against damage that it gets from the governments. So it's really a case of corporate socialism taken to the max. The industry imposes all this danger and risk and pollution on the public, and then the public ends up having to pick up the tab for the next accident. It's a mind-blowing scam of the century, really.
And the thing is, the electricity demand, the need for electricity has plummeted. It's not going up the way they had hoped, because of various factors, including the more efficient appliances and the economy going down and industry being outsourced to other countries. We don't use electricity the way that we have been, and it's going backwards. So we don't need these risky, expensive, aging plants. But then what happens, like what we're discovering with Humboldt Bay, and which has been closed down, and with San Onofre, which just closed down, is then you've got to face the reality of what to do with the radioactive waste that's going to be deadly for 250,000 years and more. And the of course, the utilities want to get out from under that responsibility, and the NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, is cooperating with the utilities to relieve them of responsibility so that they don't have to do any more emergency planning. They don't have to have budget for monitoring the radioactive waste that they've left on these sites. And they don't want to put the management nor the money into it that is really required, because this stuff is so corrosive. So we've got, even if we, after we close them down, we have a really big challenge to protect the population and the everything, the environment, against the release of these radioactive materials. And Russia is really pushing its nuclear industry on third world countries too, Bing. It's really discouraging to see that in the countries like India and Vietnam going for these baits. Although Vietnam, I think I did read, it's not going anywhere.
Well, it's this is an interesting time in history because there's a resurgent denuclearization movement worldwide taking form. The meeting and efforts here in California are just one instance of that. And at the same time, there's this mythical movement toward a nuclear renaissance. So there's a renuclearization and a denuclearization coming to butt heads. And I think that's really important to stress the connection between nuclear energy and nuclear weapons. Because right here in the Bay Area, we have the Lawrence Livermore facility where they're planning to...
At Livermore.
They're planning to, for the next couple of years, be doing testing with simulating nuclear explosions with lasers and plutonium. And these guys are really crazy.
Oh, I just wanted to also bring up that there is a big connection between fracking and the nuclear issue. There's a lot of radioactive waste created from fracking. The caustic chemicals that are injected into the ground. Maybe the Main Street moms are aware of this and will have already spoken about it, but I feel like such a cross concern here with fracking, of course, because it's ruining the water and for so many other reasons, but it also is hideously radioactive. The caustic chemicals bring up elements from below ground that are never would come up if they weren't disturbed in that way. And then it gets into the wastewater and to the groundwater, the radiation. And also there are many patents held by the various fracking companies to use radioactive elements in their processing of it, not just to bring up the thorium and the radon from underground, but to use in drill bits and in fracturing the rock to get down as deeply as they want. They have patents to use little tiny nuclear explosions. So we don't know if they're for sure doing that because they don't want us to know, but they've got the patents, and this is creating a lot of earthquakes all over. And the right now, in fact, they're fracking on an earthquake fault that ends up at San Onofre. That's all we would need, is to have an earthquake disrupt the over 1,600 tons of radioactive waste that's sitting there at the site in San Onofre, 13 feet above sea level. But back to Diablo Canyon, we really would encourage people to come to the Bay Area strategizing meeting on January 27th, because it'll be easier to get to. But if you can come to San Luis Obispo next weekend on for any of the events, it's all day on Saturday and all day on Sunday. You can get more information about that on nonukesca.net. That's nonukesca.net. And we should have top activists there from not only California, but we're going to have Harvey come from all the way from Ohio, bless your heart. And also we're having Chuck Johnson come from PSR, from Physicians for Social Responsibility in Washington State, who's working to shut down a another very dangerous reactor in Washington State called the Columbia Generating Station. It's only 10 miles from Hanford. And also we'll be joined by Mimi Gurman from Portland, Oregon, who has a wonderful website called Radcast, and who is also working to shut down that Columbia Generating Station. And we're also very blessed to have Diane DiRigo and Tim Judson from the Nuclear Information Resource Services in Washington, D.C., coming out here to help with their national organization. Okay. Well, we absolutely are so really helped by the Friends of the Earth involvement with this issue. They really led the charge in to close San Onofre, and now they're participating at a very high level and closing down Diablo Canyon. And Damon Moglen is coming all the way from Washington, D.C. for this.
You can find out more at nonukesca.net. There's links to other organizations that are part of the network. There's events, a calendar, and there's news links as well as videos relating to this issue. One of the features, or several of which feature Harvey.
And we need to talk Governor Brown into shutting this down.
So, yes, and there are a lot of great things about our ability to shut Diablo, because there are issues on a state level. Most of the time we're closed out on regulatory issues with a nuclear plant, because it was preempted by the Atomic Energy Act of 1954. But the at Diablo we have economic issues. We also have water quality issues and other levers that we can use on a statewide basis to shut Diablo. We're going to be talking about some of these strategies, the possibility of an initiative, a statewide vote. Also the possibility, Cynthia Papermaster is working with Code Pink on a rate revolt, where PG&E customers would either withhold their entire bill or part of their bill, against Diablo. We feel very optimistic about the possibilities of shutting these reactors in a fairly short period of time. So this is not a kind of an abstract meeting. We are really strategizing. We're also going to be talking about feed-in tariffs and ways to promote renewables, which will certainly undercut any alleged demand for Diablo. I mean, PG&E gets less than 10% of its capacity from these two nuclear plants. They're really unnecessary, and we to operate them at all. We learned that in San Onofre. You know, Southern California Edison was yelling and screaming about how important San Onofre was, and it shut, and nobody noticed. I mean, no lights went out. There was no giant radium pack. These rolling blackouts that they predicted never materialized. So this is all very important, and anybody who really is interested and committed to the idea of shutting Diablo, now's the time. This is not an abstract kind of lecture situation. This is hands-on activism.
No, we didn't want to talk at all about Fukushima fallout and the relation between what's going on here in California and what's going on in Japan.
Well, one thing we might want to mention, Fukushima, as a result of Fukushima, five more reactors have permanently shut. Now, when Fukushima happened on March 11th, there were 2011, there were 54 licensed operable reactors in Japan, and the six at Fukushima are dead, and now five more have joined, and we're hoping other reactors. Well, we hope they all stay shut in Japan, and that's one thing that we really need to link to.
I've heard the government, though, the prime minister is pro nuclear and is trying to open them up. And has issued a ban on talking about nuclear issues. What's the latest on that?
Well, Shinzo Abe is a very—he got elected, as somewhat of an anti-nuclear candidate. And of course, immediately switched his ground. He's now extremely pro-nuclear, as well as being pro-militaristic. and anti-free speech, and they do have a State Secrets Act in Japan, so it's a struggle. But all the reactors in Japan are still shut, and that's the one good thing that has come from Fukushima, is that there are 54 reactors have not been operating since about a year after the accident. And Shinzo Abe is fighting to get them reopened, but the public resistance has been very strong. And I think that the lessons for California, as Jim mentioned, radiation has come here from Fukushima. It is washing up on the shores of California. It came by air within less than a week, and there are studies indicating a very clear impact on the health of the people of California. And this is, to add this to Diablo Canyon, which is surrounded by earthquake faults, for God's sakes. It's only 45 miles from the San Andreas Fault, which is half the distance that Fukushima was from the earthquake that destroyed the epicenter that destroyed those six reactors. And, there's actually a newly found earthquake fault at Diablo within 600 yards of the reactors. And so this is, the lesson of Fukushima is that there is nothing that can protect an atomic reactor from an earthquake if the earthquake is big enough.
I want to put in a plug here for our upcoming documentary. It's called Shutdown, the California-Fukushima Connection. And people can find out more about that at shutdown.doc. That's shutdown.doc.tv.
And as a result of Fukushima, there is a powerful worldwide movement that is reversing, as Jim has said, the nuclear situation. In Germany, the response to Fukushima was enormous and pretty much immediate. You had a pro-nuclear prime minister, Angela Merkel, who pretty much just turned around and shut 8 of Germany's 19 reactors, and the other 11 are in the process of going down. And Germany has had an extraordinarily successful transition towards a solar-topian, totally renewable economy. And California, really, of all the states in the country, is really pushing forward. And there are very, very strong financial reasons why California could follow Germany into a renewable, a totally renewable-based economy. And really, one of the biggest stumbling blocks, if not the biggest, is the continued operation at Diablo. If those two reactors were shut, the vacuum would be very, very quickly filled by renewables, and it would give everybody in the state a big boost forward in terms of converting to green power, which is the only way any economy in the world is going to prosper in the future.
We're going to have to wrap it up. We're at the top of the hour, and I want to give you an opportunity to mention the upcoming free open public events to shut down the Diablo nukes. Do you want to go over them, Mary Beth?
Okay. There's January 23rd at the Public Library in San Luis Obispo from 6 to 9. There
p.m.
will be an event, 6 to 9 p.m. And then on Saturday from 9 to 6 and Sunday in San Luis Obispo. And you can find out information about that on nonukesca.net. And there is also a strategizing meeting in San Francisco at the address is on nonukesca.net as well. And that one is from, what's the time, Harvey?
It's it's from 6 to 9 p.m. People are encouraged to bring their own food. We're not making it a potluck yet, but maybe we should. But, from 6 to 9 p.m., it's at the local two of Unite, which is in the Haight. And I don't have the exact address.
I have it, Harvey. It's 215 Golden Gate Avenue at Leavenworth, near the Civic Center BART.
Right, and that one's free and open to the public. Dennis Bernstein from KPFA will be there, and so will Larry Fahn, former president of the Sierra Club, along with Cynthia and Mary Beth and Ruthie Sackheim and so many other great activists. So we're really looking forward to that as an organizing meeting in San Francisco. We had a previous meeting at Working Assets. 30 or 40 people showed up, and it was really a good, strong
global exchange. Group. Yeah.
Yeah, global exchange. I'm sorry. And we're looking forward to having a bigger group and really winning this. I mean, this is the time we can really shut Diablo Canyon and get to Solartopia. And there are a lot of ways we can do it. So please come to San Luis Obispo and then to San Francisco, and let's get it done.
I want to thank you, Harvey Wasserman, journalist and longtime anti-nuclear activist and advocate for renewable energy, for joining us on Post Carbon Radio. Mary Beth Brangen and Jim Heddle of the Ecological Options Network in Bolinas, doing such great work. And let's hope we can be California nuke-free.
Thank you.
Thank you.
See you next.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you all. We'll be in touch.
All right, guys.